Welcome to Joiners, the podcast with Tim and Danny, where we explore the world of hospitality by chatting with its most colorful characters.
Precisely, Danny. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well.
Thank you. Something I wanted to talk about real quick. What's your stance on exclamation points in emails?
It's tough, man.
It's gotten out of hand.
It has. But also, when you don't have an exclamation point, it makes your email's tone seem very bitchy. Like serious or bitchy.
Yeah. And I think we need...
So we do the exclamation point to offset it, where it's like, yeah, sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Sometimes I'll even throw a smiley face in there, just be like, I know I'm telling you something for the 10th time, but I'm still not mad. I am mad, but I'm not...
But I'm not going to show you
Not
that.
Shaming you. Yeah. I'm guilty of it. I think we need a global reset.
That's a good
We need
point.
To like, let's... It doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah.
For it to mean something, you have to have like 4 or 5 exclamation points. Yeah, I don't like superlatives in normal speech. I don't want to have to do it in emails. And I'm very conscious of it because I want to scale back. And every time I do, I'll like go back through an email. I'll take 4 or 5 exclamation points out.
I mean, yeah, the exclamation exchange rate is getting out of hand.
Yeah, and it reads like an obituary.
You need 5 just to equal what 1 used to mean.
Yeah.
What's
anyway,
with that?
Enough about me. What's up with you?
You know, I had a pretty wild Sunday. Wild not in the way that
a fun day Sunday
no,
Sunday fun day
wild in a bad way, I would say.
Okay,
the weather was nice.
It was
this past weekend, so weather's nice, which is not typical for this time of year. We're in, you know, mid-April, and we decide to go into the park. We live near Humboldt Park, and so Ellie like takes Ruby into the park, and Arthur and I kind of stay behind.
Those are your children, Ruby, yep, 3-year-old girl, Arthur, 6-year-old boy.
Yeah, you doxing me again?
No, but don't. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you have to set the stage. Yeah, you're going to tell enough. A story. Yep. This is your family.
So Ellie and Ruby go into the park, and I'm like getting Arthur ready, getting make sure he has his shoes and whatever he needs, and then I go to find my shoes. You know, put my socks on. I think I like maybe pour myself a glass of water in the kitchen. And when I come back, Arthur's gone.
Oh.
And Ellie and Ruby had left, you know, like 5-10 minutes before. And Arthur, I obviously go to the spot where Arthur was left by me, and he's not there.
You left him in your house?
Yep.
Okay.
And the front door's open, the gate is closed, and he's gone.
Hmm.
And I'm like, obviously panicking. I call
Feeling
Ellie
red in the face.
Yeah,
panic
the heart rate is rising.
Oh, God.
I'm calling Ellie repeatedly. She picks up after like the 6th call, and I'm like, is Arthur with you? And she's like, no. And I'm like, just losing it. I'm like going all around the house, going to our backyard. I'm like, just kind of like panicking. It feels like a scene in a movie where like the camera just like zooms all the way back.
Yeah.
And you're just like alone in a, you know, in a space with like, you know, like just like, I don't know, just so disoriented. And I'm just like screaming out for Arthur. I'm like looking
in
the park.
I think you have to explain your proximity to the park at this point.
Yeah, I live pretty close to the park.
Extremely close to the park.
Very close. And yeah, and there's like a gate in front of our house. And so the only way you can get out of the house without a key to unlock that gate is you can like press the, you know, you can buzz the door open from the
intercom.
Oh, so
he can't open that. Oh, he can open it to get out.
You could press that button and then run out fast. You have a certain amount of time from when you press that door open.
Oh, so he's
for that,
so that
gate
gate's
to be
locking him into the front yard
that's,
area?
Well, that's what I would have thought. But he obviously pressed that button and ran out and opened the gate
he did?
And closed it. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so we're panicking. Ellie and Ruby come back to where I am, and we're like looking for him, and Ellie spots him because he's wearing like a yellow. Like a yellow hat. She spots him at like the coconut ice cream cart. And we, you know, of course, like, you know, we get to him and we're like, Arthur, you can't just like leave the house without an adult. Like, you gave us a scare. You know, I think I said the F word, and you know, I was just,
one.
I was like, what the fuck, or something like that. And you know, he was like kind of unfazed. Like, he doesn't understand the gravity of it. But for sure, for those, you know, however many minutes that was, I was like, he's gone.
Was a coconut ice cream that good? Is that the thesis of this?
The funniest part is that the couple who kind of runs it, Arthur knows Ellie's number. So they called her phone, but she didn't pick it up because she thought it was like a telemarketer or like, you know, unknown number. But yeah, it was.
So what's the moral
of the
story?
Nightmare.
When your child's gone, answer telemarketer calls?
Yeah, answer
every call.
Yeah, for sure.
When your husband calls, don't make him do it six times. What is that? Why don't women answer their phone? I answer my phone. Have I ever like not answered the phone when you call me?
Calls. Yeah,
I answer everybody's calls.
And if I don't, I send a text. I'm like, is everything okay?
Yeah. If a phone is like in a purse, I understand that.
And yeah, it's brutal.
But yeah.
But yeah, it was a scary.
So how long did the whole ordeal last?
I don't, you know, that's, people have asked that and I have no idea. Like, it could have been many minutes. It
probably
could have been
4 minutes.
Yeah,
but in your mind, it was.
And you just don't even know what the effect is on you. You know, I still don't. Like, subconsciously, how does that affect you?
So I'm actually impressed at the escape artistry to push. Like, he knew to push that. Yeah, or is that like every time you guys leave the house, you have to push that thing and run out?
No. We always use a key. But if there's like someone, like if you're at the gate, Arthur loves to push the button so that you can open it and come in. But yeah, it was wild. Yeah. Never letting that kid out of our sight again.
Well, I don't think it's up to you. I think that he has to. Have you ever considered leashing the boy? Dad was a leash child. Yeah, he was the youngest of five. My dad loves to
That time was pretty nuts.
Yeah, he was born in 55. So yeah,
there probably weren't many leash children at that time.
Late 50s, early 60s.
Was he hyper?
No, that was all the rage back then.
Oh, really?
Yeah, kids on leashes. Please. Kids were on leashes before dogs were on leashes. That was pre canine leash.
Was he hyperactive or no?
Yeah, he still is. Yeah. You've spent time with my dad. He loves to talk about what a rascal he was. No, I was pretty mellow.
You seem pretty mellow.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm hyperactive.
Yeah, no. Are you kidding me? No, we just had an interview for a piece that's being written about the pod. I literally thought you were falling asleep answering this girl's questions yesterday. She's like, so how did you guys meet? And you're like, well, it goes back.
No, I'm not.
I'm like, Jesus Christ, man. Like,
I don't think that means my tone is always hyper. I just mean that, like, I'm physically, like, always in motion.
I can
like,
see that
to
you,
move.
I can see that you are a hyper
antsy.
Child.
Yeah, I get very antsy.
You probably did not sit still.
You get antsy. You're, like, always, like, doing the foot stuff. And
not since the debacle at Shaw's. I'm hyper aware. I don't want people stealing my stool.
All right, we've eaten up enough time with this intro.
Rob Levitt's grinding his teeth into dust. Get on with the show. I want to hear the chef. We do have a chef.
Yeah, we got Adam Meyer.
Yeah, this week we have... maybe a little unconventional. We have the guy behind the guy. We've had this guy's boss on. Everybody knows John Mannion, friend of the pod. This is like, I would say that Adam is John's right-hand man.
Yep.
He's worked in a few places in Chicago. You know,
invaluable member of the team.
Invaluable member of the team. Entrusted right-hand man.
Yep.
The keys to the kingdom.
That's right.
I don't know if that's words. Not, yeah. But he worked at Gibson's.
To the Mannion kingdom.
Bristol under Todd Stein.
That's true.
And then went to El Che with John Mannion and helped open Bracero. And it's cool to get his perspective. I actually met Adam at a Wandawege event where John Mannion was cooking. He brought Adam. Adam was cooking.
And Tim and I instantly bonded with him over, I think you should leave.
I think you should leave quotes, yeah. If you're a fan of absurdist comedy, Danny and I will take to you pretty immediately, which was the case with Adam. He's a good dude. He's got some fun stories. And it's interesting to hear his story where he was like, he kind of had to grow up fast. And he's like, man, I got to figure this out. He really wanted to get into food and kind of forced his way in and started from the ground up. And he's really found his footing in Chicago hospitality. So without further ado, please enjoy this conversation that is simply too good with Adam Meyer. This episode of Joiners is brought to you by Branca USA, sharing Italy's taste with the world sustainably and respectfully. Fratelli Branca.
I wanted to start with a hard-hitting question. Last night I was making salmon for the family. Had three salmon fillets in the pan, some butter.
Where'd you get your fillets?
They were just like Trader Joe's situations.
Okay.
You know, not ideal, but we're used to it. We can handle it. So I've got them in the pan, searing in butter, and I decide to try to flip all three at the same time, not really paying much attention to what the...
With a spatula.
Okay. So I get the spatula under them, three, and I flip them all successfully. They land in the burning hot, boiling butter. It splashes me right in the hand. And it made me think.
The worst
burn. I right away knew. I was like, this sucks.
I had an oil splatter burn this week, too.
And it made me think about, like, Adam, in theory, has been through millions of these situations.
My worst burn was at Gibson's, and we were cooking a whitefish on a sizzle tray with a ton of oil, and I went to flip it, and it did the same thing, and it splattered all over my arm, and it was the day before I left for vacation. The whole vacation, I had my arm wrapped up, and it was probably the worst pain I've been in.
Yeah, I mean, this happened last night, and I'm showing Tim, but it's like, it could have been way worse.
Yeah,
I'm curious, like, why? Like, but it was boiled. I mean, the butter was... It was on flame for a long time, so it
could be worse in a day because the skin will die. But when you splatter stuff, hot stuff on your skin, you have to like right away put under cold water, or it'll like continue to burn.
Yeah,
like you want
to. People
like,
tell you not to do that, which is you should definitely put it under some cold water.
But apparently, you can't put it under like water that is too cold. It has to be cool water, but not like icy cold water.
Right.
For whatever reason,
mustard apparently works too.
Huh.
I tried it once. It did not.
But mustard?
mustard does not work.
Yellow or?
Yellow, yeah. It actually could have just been the older line cook lying to me. He's like, put yellow mustard on that. I was
the yellow mustard?
I was like 21 years old.
Clueless. He's just like laughing in the back as you just
slathered
mustard. Yeah.
I had an opening question too, and I want to clear this up.
Way better than the oil splatter or what?
Way better. Your last name is not Wiener.
My last name is not Wiener.
It's Meyer. But
it's Meyer.
Let me
Todd
explain.
Stein would tell you differently.
I did catch that in Todd's interview. But it's confusing because of your Instagram handle. And it took me a second, and I'm like, oh, it's a play on Oscar Meyer Wiener.
Correct.
Your handle
I'm also not
Adam
a hot dog.
Meyer Wiener.
He's not a hot dog.
He's not.
I'm not.
But
I'm
if
just
you
like
were,
that, I'm a real, I'm a real boy.
Someone's dressed as a hot dog. Could have been either of us.
I was listening to Todd's podcast, and when he said that, I was like, I've known this man for probably 6 years now, and he might not know my last name.
Yes. Wait. So when Todd didn't know your last name, you were dying.
I was like, "Is this guy kidding me?" Like, I literally worked countless 80-hour weeks for this guy, and he does not know my last name.
Hopefully these jokes will play to him in 2x.
What did he call you in the kitchen? Like, "Hey, Chief. Hey, Bub."
He called me Adam, but like, I don't know where the Adam Meyer Wiener is a new thing. Like back when he knew me, there was no Adam Meyer Wiener yet. It was just Adam Meyer. So I don't know.
Did your resume say Wiener?
Nope.
Then really, there's no excuse.
But it's Adam Jerome.
It's Adam Jerome, yeah. Jerome is my dad's name.
Ah. So. Did he go by Jerry or Jerome?
He goes by Jerry.
Oh, nice.
I call him Jerome sometimes.
Does he get pissed
like,
off?
Yeah, he gets pretty
like
pissed
Elaine
off.
And Jerry?
Like Elaine and Jerry, yep.
It's funny, like, you just never think that Jerry is Jerome, but obviously it is. You just never hear many Jeromes.
It's one or the other, I feel like.
Tim, you know many Jeromes?
Just Jerome Garcia.
Oh, nice.
Jerome Bettis?
Yeah, that's kind of where I was thinking. Okay, Adam, where are you from?
I'm from Chicago.
Ah, which part?
West Side.
Okay.
Cicero, so suburbs, kind of. My family moved out to Streamwood when I was pretty young, though, so northwest suburbs.
Yeah, and did you kind of always have the cooking bug?
Yeah, I grew up in a predominantly Italian and Hungarian family. All my family's from over there. So we grew up basically in the kitchen. I was like the stereotypical little kid under the table, grabbing all the loose leftovers that fell on the ground and annoying my Nana. And we were always in the kitchen. It was kind of our place of gathering as a family and something that we did quite often.
Big family, siblings?
Huge family, man. I have four brothers. I have six stepsisters and a stepbrother.
Holy shit. How many is the most that live together at one time?
In one household, we had eight or nine of us at one time.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
That's like the beginning of Home Alone when they have all the cousins.
Yes, exactly. But they were all loosely related to me and in my age group, so it was just pretty wild.
I think
that's without extended family.
Well, was it fun?
It was a lot of fun. It was pretty stressful and chaotic. But,
well, were you on the younger end of that?
So I had two older half-brothers, excuse me, and then I have two younger brothers, so I'm kind of in the middle there.
Okay.
And then my step-siblings, I am the oldest except one stepsister, so I'm kind of like towards the upper, but still in the middle.
I think it'd be fun to be a young kid and have all that activity around. It might be annoying if you're like the oldest.
Yeah,
like,
it definitely.
Then you're
would
probably expected to be a guardian in some ways.
Yeah, I kind of was actually though, because my parents got divorced when I was young, so I had to watch my little brothers when they were still in school and I was still in school, because my mom had to obviously work a lot. So yeah, I spent a lot of time watching over them, which was hard, and I was definitely not equipped or able to at that point in my life as a sixth grade child.
Would
to do
you cook
that,
for them?
Yeah, I would actually.
What were the after school
it
meals?
Was nothing special, man. It was like I would get a tombstone pizza and then zhuzh it up a little bit with like some bell pepper and some onion and like maybe I cook off a little bacon or something like that. But nothing.
Are you starting with cheese?
I'm starting with cheese. Okay. Blended.
I used to do that. In my
like add cheese
really
to the tombstone?
Working to make ends meet. Yeah, add cheese to it. I would get like a I used to do cauliflower crust. You know, I'm against it now. But, you know, just like a cheese, and you crack an egg on it.
I texted Danny about that. Yeah. Like, that was an epic, epic hot take by Tim on the cauliflower.
Do you care to defend it?
No, I agree with you.
Yeah. Keep it out of the starch.
Yeah, I 100% agree. So yeah, get it out of here.
Yeah.
So were you the only one that inherited the culinary talent?
My younger brother, Sean, is a pretty good cook. My mom's a great cook. My dad's a phenomenal cook as well.
Wow.
My middle brother, not so much.
Wait, where is Sean? Is Sean cooking?
Shawnee is younger. No, he tried to do it. It was a little too hard for him, a little bit too much work for him. I think he is more of a, he wants like a 9-to-5, 40-hour.
Yeah.
Which obviously the kitchen is not that, so I think he figured that out pretty quick though for himself. So.
Yeah, do you think watching your little brothers gave you training in managing crews, line crews and stuff?
It did. It definitely did. I wish I would have watched them more and had more training because it's proven to be pretty hard to watch 25 people at once. So,
yeah, is that both Che and Bracero, or just Bracero?
Just Bracero right now. I'm not at Che as much.
25 people on the in back.
No, I mean, dude, when you're on Expo, or you're the head chef. You gotta watch
everyone. I see.
So,
yes.
On the line at one time, there's probably six people.
Yeah, it's pretty
plus two dishwashers, so eight.
Yeah.
But it's a whole thing. Prep
it's cool to like watch the open kitchen.
It is. I love it. I don't know if I could ever work in a closed kitchen again.
Yeah.
It would be really weird.
Yeah, both of them have that distinct visual component.
Yeah. It's also nice to see because like when you're in it, you're just kind of like looking at the same thing over and over again. So it's nice to be able to turn around and kind of break out of the monotony of like,
yeah,
oh, this is the 15th endive salad I've seen in the past 30 minutes.
Also, it helps you feel connected to like what's happening, like where your food's going, people enjoying it.
Yeah, you can see people being happy about it.
Yeah,
you
it's
can
like
see
a holistic view
head.
Of the dining experience.
Really, it's instant gratification, which, you know, all chefs are somewhat egomaniacs, so it's kind of nice to be able to
let's
turn
explore
and see
that. Yeah. All right, so where did you go to like culinary school, or did you learn on the job?
I learned on the job. When I was 17, I got my daughter's mother pregnant at the time, and obviously that was kind of an oh shit moment. We were both working at a Jimmy John's in northwest suburbs in Algonquin. So at that point it was like, what do I do to provide? So I got my life insurance license and sold life insurance for 3 years and hated it.
When you were 17, you were selling life insurance?
I had to wait to turn 18 to get the actual license, but I started studying when I was 17.
I was about
to turn 18 when we found out that she was pregnant with Stella.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
So 18, took the exam, got my license, sold life insurance for like 2.5 years probably. I was like right before I turned 21, hated it. My oldest brother, Steven, who I loved and still love very much, was a hero of mine. He, passed away. He killed himself.
Ugh.
And I realized...
It was all around the same time?
I was almost 21 at that point when that happened. When that happened, though, I was like, it was a wake-up call for me. I realized that I was not happy.
Yeah.
And I realized that I should probably do something with my life that I want to do for the rest of my life. And that's something that I'm passionate about and that I can wake up every day and feel good about. So I took all of my stuff and we moved to Antioch, Illinois, which is a lake suburb. I worked at a deli called Ellie's Deli. washed dishes, did prep, made sandwiches, made soup. I don't know if you guys have been to Lake County, but it gets pretty depressing over there in the winter after the summer months are over.
Yeah, it's like very lively in the summer and then...
super busy, super lively. And then in the wintertime, basically, it shuts down. So I was going to have almost no hours, which was a problem, obviously, having a small child.
Yeah, it's like the chain of lakes. Like it's kind of it's like a vacation destination, but like... Kind of.
Yeah, but for like hicks.
Yeah. I mean, that's a nice way of putting it. That's a horrible way of putting it. But I know what you mean. Like, I have friends with a lake house on Long Lake and Round Lake.
It's all very nice. Round Lake's nice. Antioch's super nice.
But it, people go like there for the summer. There's like a hillbilly then, side of the, oh, for sure, the whole area. Yeah.
The locals is like, for sure, especially. It's like, it's you're out there. I'm that's endearing to me, though. I love that.
Yeah, no, it is really fun. Awesome dive bars.
Great dive bars. It's like Wisconsin.
Yeah, it is. It's like a mini Wisconsin because, yep, it's just south of the border. Do you know like Christoph's up there? That's,
yes,
like,
I do.
Yeah, Christoph's. Yep. It's like this place has like everything. It's like a bowling alley, miniature golf.
It's insane.
Like
outdoor events. It's like nuts.
Yeah, go-karts, batting. It's like everything. It's, yeah.
I smell Tim's next birthday.
We did it for BK's bachelor party. It was a lot of fun. Maybe with drugs involved, but it was a nice time. So anyway, and then real quick on Antioch. Do you know Antioch Pizza?
Yes, I do.
It's pretty solid.
It's pretty
pizza.
Good. Pretty,
yeah,
good.
And they're expanding now. There's,
are they really?
Woodstock. Yeah.
Oh, see, my parents moved us to Huntley, so we were right up there by Woodstock.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. When I go back home, I will definitely be able to get a little slice of Antioch then.
Yes, you will. All right. So you're working in the deli.
Yeah, working in the deli.
You had this come to Jesus moment, a secular come to Jesus moment where you're, yes, like, I got to do something I'm enjoying.
Right.
Life is too short to spend it
miserable.
Selling life insurance.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely too short for that.
Yeah. All right. So how long are you at the deli?
Probably about 4 months.
And are you creating prepping?
I have
trying not to slice a finger off.
Yeah, just trying not to make the owner Charlie pissed off, you know, like just trying to duck under the radar and put my head down and do a good job. And
so what happens 4 months in?
Wintertime. And it's enough. Like the oh shit moment of there's nothing here for me anymore now unless I wait it out and come back in the summer, and you know, hours were getting cut. I'm probably lowest man on the totem pole at this point. But I wanted to pursue food, and I knew that, and I wanted to do it at a high level, and I talked to my dad, and he was like, you should just go for it. You'll regret it for the rest of your life if you don't. So I moved to the city.
Nice. What neighborhood?
Edgewater. So
nice.
Up north.
Barely touching
the city.
The northernmost part.
Is Edgewater like just south of Rogers Park?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then got a job in Logan Square. So I was touching all the parts of the city at that point.
Yeah, the west side. Exactly.
I got a job dishwashing at Johnny's.
Okay.
In Logan.
Yeah.
Under Sarah Jordan.
Where Big Kids is today.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So, not Big
but
Kids.
But Johnny's under Sarah Jordan is kind of the newer Johnny's.
It was the newer Johnny's, yeah.
Okay. Wild. Okay, so you're starting dishwashing there.
Yeah, dishwashing, and then got my way up to like prep, Garmo. And it was a great job. Edgewater, it turns out, is pretty expensive to live in, so I had to get another job. And one night, my friend Joe, who was bartending at Mezcal Rio Las Flores, was like, have you ever been to Dublin's? And I was like, I've never been to Dublin's before. And he took me to Dublin's, and I ended up meeting Kevin Smith, who was the head chef of Gibson's at the time. At the bar. And I was watching the cooks cook because I was a nerd and still am a nerd about food and just how lines work and how cool it is to see, you know, 2 to 4 people work together to put out a product is really interesting to me. So I was watching them, and he was like, why are you watching them like that? And I was like, oh, I want to be a cook. I'm like, you know, a cook right now, which I was not. I was like barely a prep cook, and I was definitely a dishwasher.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, I work at Gibson's. I'm the chef there. I'm hiring. And he, we struck up a conversation. He was like, how much do you make over there? And I fucking lied to him flat out. I was like, oh, like 18. That's not the case.
What was the real number?
Oh, man, it was probably like 14 at that point, 13,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, not that much of a stretch.
No, well, not, well, I mean, back then, that's pretty significant.
Percentage-wise, yeah. I guess, yeah, it is.
Yeah, it was a complete lie.
Yeah,
I also had no experience line cooking, and they hired me.
I'm clearing a half mil over there.
A day.
So I lied to him, and he brought me in for, he gave me his number, actually, and on the train the next day on the way to Johnny's, he had texted me, so I went in for an interview a couple days later, completely lied, again, on my resume, completely lied, and
a
got the job,
lying pattern.
Yeah, there was
in what ways
a lie
were you embellishing this resume?
Well, I wasn't a cook yet. Like,
oh, okay,
you know,
just like the positions.
I was going for
it's not like
a
you
line.
Said, you know, I spent 3 years at Alinea.
No, nothing like that crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
I would just embellish
things
the fact that I could cook.
Yeah, things that couldn't
on a
be
line,
checked.
But
which
you knew
I could not.
Well, you had some chops, probably.
I had ambition. I had, I was very passionate, and I spent all my time just researching, looking up food, cooking food at home. That's like all I did.
Cookbooks, internet, what was your
all the above
source YouTube. Of information? YouTube. Yeah, YouTube's a huge resource.
I would go hang out at bars just to talk to people in the industry about what they thought about what was going on, what they get a little bit of their knowledge on what.
Why do you think you were so tuned into food?
Well, like his parents what are both that amazing interest? In the kitchen, seems like.
I mean, it's definitely probably my family. I don't know.
That's like, were there, like, chefs on TV you were following at the time?
No, I've never been, like, a big celebrity chef guy. I've never had, like, that. I don't know. The celebrity chef thing is, like, how many celebrity chefs are there even? There's, like, not a ton of them. So there was never, like, a fanboy thing for me. It was more like
Tim's
I love.
Tim's a big emerald head. He's always saying,
That would be one of them. Bam!
Yeah, every time I'm cooking with Tim, I turn around and hear him just say, bam, as he's like seasoning something.
Yeah, I've literally never cooked with Tim, nor would I ever consider spending any time in any kitchen with Danny, ever.
I cooked at Tim's house, and he came over on the other side and was doing the same thing. He got two pieces of white bread and put them over my ears and said, "Are you an idiot sandwich?" I was like, "Gordon, chill, man."
Sorry about that.
Yeah, it was pretty degrading.
How annoying were my dogs that night?
I love dogs, so they weren't that annoying. They wanted that food real bad.
I know, my dogs.
Thank God Melody was there to appease them with attention.
Everybody left, and I turned to Shannon, I'm like, "We gotta train the dogs." That was embarrassing.
I mean, there was a lot going on.
Yeah,
we brought like we had two full coolers. We were like doing a whole dinner.
Yeah, this was the stock Christmas party this 2023.
It was fun.
It was pretty epic. And we got like a sneak peek at the Bracero menu.
That was the first dinner we ever cooked.
Really?
Yeah, the first dinner we cooked for people that weren't ourselves in that little Borg cube that we call the Garmo Kitchen was that dinner.
All right, so you get hired on, presumably.
Yeah, they hire me. Foolishly, they hire me.
This is like which Gibson's?
Rush.
Okay.
Downtown.
Yeah.
So the one.
Big boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The big boy, the meat grinder.
The original.
They hire me at $18 an hour. Thank you, Kevin Smith. And I walk in my first day and they hand me my uniform and I look around and I'm like, fuck, I've fucked up. I lied. I've lied too much here. Like, I am nowhere near equipped to handle this.
I'm not cashing this check.
No, I did not cash that first check, actually, because, like, they're going to find out eventually that, like, I can fake it through the training process, but, like, that's about it.
Did anyone start at the same time?
No, these guys had all been there for, like, 20 years. These are, like, they're old enough to all be my father. I am a very, very skinny, scrawny, pale white kid. Skinnier than I am now, if you can imagine that, which is probably hard. And paler than I am now, which is also probably hard to imagine. And I know basically nothing. I know the basics at best, and that's being very generous to myself and my skill level at that point. And I'm standing next to dudes that have been doing this at a very high level for a lot of years. Some of them more years than I had been alive at that point.
Yeah.
So it was very intimidating, and I had to learn very, very quickly through fire, essentially.
Yeah. How long did it take for you to feel comfortable?
About a month.
Okay. That's not terrible.
I learned, but it was
like. Did you feel like you were close to getting fired at various points?
I felt like I was close to being, like, relegated to, like, a station that was like, you suck, go over there.
Like the coal shoveling station?
Where you can't mess anything up, go over there.
Oh, my God.
But never close to being fired.
Okay.
They saw that I had a good attitude, and even like the guys that were pretty hardened and pretty hard on me, they were like, they saw in my eyes that I was willing to learn and willing to listen to them, and that I was basically a blank slate, and whatever they said, I was just going to do no matter what. And you could tell me to put yellow mustard on my burn, and I'm just going to be like, okay. So I think that endeared me to them a little bit after a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think some people kind of prefer that, you know,
for sure.
100%.
You know, yeah, you're not. Somebody's eager to learn. You hire people. Yeah. Like,
I would much rather you be green and be willing to learn than have all the skills in the world and not listen to anything that I'm saying.
Or even bad habits. Yeah.
Tons of bad habits.
Yeah,
you see it all the time.
Do you feel like the majority of your culinary education happened over there?
No. I think that it's still going on, man. I don't think that it's ever done. You know, for me, it's like I learn something every day, and sometimes I learn it in the most like places that you wouldn't think that you wouldn't even search for education. Like, you can find it, I feel like. And that's what, for me, makes this industry so special is, like, you never know, and you can't really judge a book by its cover. I mean, we have a nice amazing young woman working for us that owned a bakery in the Ukraine and is also was a lawyer and like has this whole story. And it's like, I haven't done half of that, you know, and it's just, it's different. It's different than a lot of industries, I think, in that way, where it's like you can learn and you continue to learn every day.
Wait, was that, is that Tanya?
Natalie.
Natalie. Yeah. Oh, Natalie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was the model for our photo. Yep, we did like a uniform photo shoot at the restaurant.
Yeah.
And
she's the best.
Yeah. She's like, I don't really speak English. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, oh, okay. What do you speak? Spanish? She's like Ukraine. And I'm like,
well, she also knows like four other languages too.
Yeah. Everybody in Europe does.
Yeah. She's one of the smartest people I've ever met.
Yeah. She was great. I didn't know. So she was a pastry chef.
She owned her own bakery.
Wow.
Yeah. And was like a lawyer, apparently. I don't know. It's like, it's impressive.
Now, is that a confabulated resume like yours?
I hope not, because I've really built this image up of her in my head. So I hope she's not lying to me like I lied to poor Kevin Smith. Those guys on the Gibson's line were probably like, what did you do here, man? Why did you hire this kid?
Seemed like you worked out as a hire for them, ultimately.
I did. I worked there for like 3 years, actually. So
wow. How high did you get on the totem pole?
I almost got to sous chef. And that's actually when I left there, is I had a sous chef interview with Dan Hubschman, who's actually still there. And he looked at me and was just basically like, we're going to give it to one of my best friends, Marcus. They gave it to him instead. He was like, you're not ready for it yet.
Where's Marcus now?
Marcus is in Disney Springs at the whatever Gibson's property is down there. I forget what it's called. The boathouse.
Disney Springs.
Yeah. It's called the boathouse. It's like it's a thing. It's a whole thing. It's in Florida.
I trust you.
And so at that point, do you go to Bristol?
Yeah, at that point, I was a little frustrated with that conversation, even though hindsight being 2020 should not have been. He was 100% right. I was not ready for it. And it actually was the best thing that ever happened to me, is him telling me that. So I was looking for a job, and Russell Cook, who was the CDC of Hugo's at the time, which is attached to Gibson's, is very good friends, and I would say like almost best friends with Todd Stein. They worked together in Louisville and in Las Vegas, I believe. Hmm. And he...
You should make up a different nickname for Todd, since he didn't... A different last name for him, since he didn't know yours.
I'll have to think about that. Just Todd remember. Smith.
Leave Todd alone.
Todd, I love you.
All right. So at Bristol, so Todd was... Was he head chef at Bristol?
He was doing Fermentos, and he was about to take over the Bristol, but he was at Fermentos.
Okay.
So I actually did my stage at Fermentos, but Russell hooked us up. I ate at Fermentos, loved it, wanted to work for Todd, wanted to do a different type of food because I had never really done – I mean, Gibson's is great. It's a classic Chicago steakhouse, but it's essentially just red meat on a plate and classic, you know, steamed spinach and potatoes, and, you know, there's a time and place for that, but it's not necessarily – something that I strived to do for the rest of my life at that point.
Yeah, it's not as creative as you were maybe looking to get.
Yeah, exactly.
Bristol was creative.
Bristol is very creative. So I did the stage, and Todd was like, do you want to work at Fermentos or do you want to go over to the Bristol? And me being Italian and growing up in that world of like Italian cooking, I didn't want to pursue that. I wanted to do something that put me a little bit more out of my comfort zone and to learn techniques that I didn't know. So I decided on the Bristol, and I started there basically at the same time that Todd took over. And then Joel Hessman came in as the CDC.
And Todd took over for who?
I think Pendel.
Okay.
It was weird because there was a CDC named Abby and then her sous chef, Trevin. And then Pendel was kind of like out of the picture and kind of went to Boca, I think, at that point. It was more like Swift & Sons, Belena.
Okay.
So Todd took over for Pendel, I guess, essentially. And I started basically right at the beginning of him taking over, which was fun.
And what was your position?
Garmo?
Yeah. Okay.
And how did it
when
change?
When I staged at the Bristol, Abby and Trevin made me wash dishes. So,
Was Todd pretty vocal about the ways in which he wanted to change the identity of Bristol post-Pendel?
I don't know if he really wanted to change it. I think he wanted to kind of like
build on it.
Yeah, I think that Todd wanted to keep the same mindset with his twist on things, obviously, as you know one would do if you take over a program like that. But I don't think he really wanted to gut it by any means.
Yeah.
A lot of the dishes that were on there that were the classics stayed, and we just tried to make, you know, just as good or better.
Were there new techniques that you were coming across that were making
I never made like a pate. I've never cleaned a pig ear before. It was like, it was a whole lot of like off cut stuff that was happening still there, which was cool. pasta. Even though I grew up eating it a lot, I never really knew how to make it in mass.
Yeah.
So
you have fresh pasta at home?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Lucky boy.
And not fresh. I think that the dry stuff is great too. If you buy good dry stuff, I'm all for it.
That is true. Do you have a favorite brand?
No, I like just go in the section at Trader Joe's or at Whole Foods or Mariano's and just kind of like see whatever shape looks good and buy it. I think that if you do dry pasta right, you save your starch water and then you kind of make your sauce good, and the dry pasta just needs to be cooked well.
How important is salting the water?
Super.
It's so important.
So important.
I had a conversation with my dad about that last week, and he undersalted the water. And
cardinal sin.
I know. My dad does not like to be told what to do in the kitchen. I don't blame him. I don't know.
My dad also does not like to be told what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, even though I have
salt
like
that water.
Do any dads like being told what to do?
Not in the kitchen, apparently.
Yeah. I think that that's a universal dad trait.
Do you cook with your dad?
He's much more, you know, experienced and talented than I am in a kitchen. He's like some.
I'm shocked by that.
That's
really
not saying much.
Are you that bad in the kitchen?
He's a bar guy. Hey, that bad? Maybe he's that good. He's someone who can just like, make any meal from whatever's in the kitchen. He doesn't need to follow a recipe. It's just experience at this point. And Ellie's mom is the same way. They're just like there's like a level of knowledge and that comes with experience and like trying a bunch of things.
Yeah, my family does not follow recipes at all.
No, yeah.
Danny's mother-in-law is my third grade teacher, and we had a kitchen in the classroom, and she like taught us how to cook stuff.
Yeah, oh, nice. She's great.
Montessori for you.
I love that.
Yeah, it was cool.
I think cooking should be a skill that is taught.
I know. I agree.
Totally.
I wish that
it's
I
like
had
an important life skill. Like you're a grown up, you should know how to cook.
100%. I didn't learn how to like cook stuff until I was in my mid 20s.
I mean, that's right. You got the other side of it where you can make drinks, so you can like and there's like a bartering system there.
we had Jake Schneider from Schneider Deli in here, and he was his parents put him in like a cooking class up in like Highland Park with adults when he was a kid in grade school.
Home ec was like the only class I went to in high school. I would skip all the other ones and I would just go to home ec.
I wish we had had that.
And woodworking.
Yeah.
Those are the only two I would like to go
to. I know your archetype.
Yeah.
Blaze in the morning.
Oh, man.
Go to home ec and eat all the food.
Yep. and then leave.
Yeah.
Math class, I gotta go. I can't be around here anymore.
I have an insurance convention to get to.
Yeah.
This episode of Joiners is brought to you by Stock Workwear. Today I'm joined by Stock employee Allie Barnes on her 2-year work anniversary. Allie, happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Allie has a very keen sense of humor. And since we make uniforms and merch for bars, restaurants, and hotels, I thought it'd be a fun exercise to have ChatGPT write jokes on those topics and have Allie rate them 1 to 10. Allie, what do you say?
Super fun. Let's do it.
Okay. Joke number 1. What did the bartender say after Charles Dickens ordered a martini?
What?
Olive or twist?
Because of Oliver Twist.
Because of Oliver Twist. He's the author of Oliver
Seven.
Twist. 7?
Yeah.
It's not bad.
It's not
It's
bad?
Original.
It is. I've never heard it before.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's
so,
not bad.
Okay.
All right. Joke 2. What do you call a fake noodle at a restaurant?
What?
An impasta.
Okay. It made me laugh, so.
That was a genuine laugh.
8.
Okay. 8 out of 10. We're getting better. Here's our last joke. Why was the broom late to work at the hotel?
Why?
It swept in. She's nodding. She's not laughing. Now she's laughing.
8.5.
Really?
Yeah, 8.5.
Well, you have to justify that. Why?
I really like it when you use W's instead of L's.
You do like that.
Or like W's instead of R's.
But didn't we have to ban that during work hours because you were doing it too much?
Yes.
And it was...
So a little bit...
It was bad on sales calls.
We lost a lot of sales.
We lost a lot of swales.
Swales.
All right. Well, Stock, creative workwear for the hospitality industry. Back to the show. All right. So how long were you at Bristol?
probably about another 3.5 years. The only reason that the pandemic happened. So that was like, I would have stayed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, I was there until the pandemic.
I didn't even know it was that recent.
Yeah.
Okay. And then when are you aware of John Mannion at this time?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Where do you first meet him?
Well, Alex Cooper, who is the director of ops and beverage director of both spots, was my AGM at the Bristol and a close personal friend of mine. So he, when he left the Bristol, went to Che to be the GM.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's kind of how I met John. But
so that's for the opening of Che then? Right?
No,
or was this after?
No, this was after.
Because what year did Che open?
7 years ago, so 2016, 2017.
Okay. Because there was like a brief overlap with Serena.
Yes.
Like maybe a year?
Well, it depends. No, more. I think like 2 or 3.
Oh,
or
okay.
Two. Maybe like 2. Because the Serena kind of shut down, I think, because of the pandemic as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Or around that time it happened.
Hmm.
But I actually, over the pandemic, when I did not have a job, because we were obviously all kind of jobless and searching for our next thing, helped John with burger events at Fitzgerald's. Before he took over
for Baby Gold.
Yeah, for Baby Gold. But it wasn't even Baby Gold at that point. It was just like John Mannion of Elche doing a burger event because they hosted like Sunday burger day or night. And they had like bands play and it was still COVID, but they spaced everyone out and everyone was wearing masks. And
I was talking to Jackson at Maxwell's and she said that you did a lot of like charity cooking during the pandemic. What was that situation like?
I mean, at that point it was like, I felt like everyone needed a band together. We were kind of like, we were all very hurt and all very lost, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And for me, the one skill that I know that I have is to be able to cook and to provide hospitality to people and to feed people. There's not really much else going on, admittedly.
Yeah, I don't think also from like that's comfortable for you.
100%.
Yeah.
So I would cook for people. We did a couple of rallies and stuff like that. Jackson was organizing a lot of stuff, so she was like a go-to for me. If like she needed any help, I would extend my time and effort. And it was important to me to give back to the community in that time because so much had been stripped away from us and taken away from us. It mm-hmm. felt like my duty to give back to the industry that's given so much to me. And as terrible and as much of a meat grinder and as all the bad things that you can say about this industry, there's, if you look and you really pay attention, there's so much good that comes out of it. And there's so many life-changing stories and so many life-changing things that have happened to me personally and people around me that it's like I felt the need to give back in that moment because it felt like we were kind of all spiraling a little bit.
Yeah. Spiraling but also leaning on each other. Like 100%. It was very cool to watch.
We all really commiserated. We all banded together, though, and that, like, to me, is the true sign of like what this industry is all about, is taking care of each other. We focus a lot on taking care of the guests, which is equally as important, but I like to look inward, especially at Bracero and Chain. How are we taking care of our staff? How are we taking care of each other? Mm-hmm. It's really important to me, and it's important to me as an industry that, you know, I hope that that trend continues, and I think that it has after COVID, which is really a positive thing.
Yeah. So you get into Che. This is Che open when you start there?
Well, I was bar backing and bartending at Spilt Milk and Little Victories.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
It was about a year. And then I was ready to get back into a kitchen. I was a little burnt out, admittedly, from the Bristol and from just cooking and being a chef in general. Took a year, did the kitchen at Little Victories as like kind of like a consultant, like cooked a little bit in the mornings, but then bar backed and bartended at night. Not really, bartending is a loose word. I opened beers and poured draft beers and watched other people make cocktails. So bar backed. And then,
I heard Danny grinding his teeth when you said bartended.
I know, I could see it. He has jaw clenched.
Yeah,
really,
just bawling
really
my fist. Yeah. Fired up. Shaking my fist in the sky.
don't worry, I was mediocre at best. Alex actually reached out and was like, hey, would you be interested in coming to sit down? And I was like, well, for John Mannion and for you, yeah, I'd be interested. You guys are probably the only two people I'd be willing to sit down with right now.
Hmm.
Went and sat down, had a really good talk. They were looking for a CDC, which obviously, as both of you know, is a pretty big job, pretty big responsibility, especially under someone like John, who is, you know, one of the most unsung heroes, you know, in the Chicago industry. Like people, yeah. I could not give him more flowers because he is the best. But
he's the real deal.
He's the real deal. Stand up guy. And yeah, I took the job because it felt like it was the right fit. And I thought it'd be really cool to learn under someone as strong as John.
Did they have you do a tasting or anything? Or?
No.
That's nice.
No, they didn't. I think that Alex's recommendation was enough for John. And then I had actually done the burger stuff with John. So John kind of knew my temperament, my personality, how I cooked. So I think that he kind of already had saw what he needed to see.
Yeah, there's familiarity.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It wasn't like a blind. Like it was not the first day that I met him. I actually had washed dishes for them too. Mm. While I was at the Bristol on my off days, if they needed a dishwasher, I'd go in there and wash dishes. So I had met him briefly.
Yeah.
He didn't really talk to me too much those days when I was like dishwashing, but he'd come back and he would say hi and ask if I needed anything.
Nice. So how does cooking at Che, or I guess being the chef de cuisine at Che, compared to being at Bristol, being at Gibson's?
A lot more responsibility. At the Bristol, I was a sous chef, so a manager and a leader, but not necessarily the man, you know? Going into Che, it was like sink or swim. You got to do this. This is yours, and it's your opportunity to either succeed or fail at. And you have to. There's a lot of work that goes into it, and it was a new chapter in my life, and it still is like developing. Like, you know, I'm still learning how to be the best leader that I can be.
Yeah.
And there are definitely speed bumps, and there are definitely days where it's like, man, I wish I would have done that differently, or I wish I would have said something different here. I wish I would have. Been more positive here. I wish I would have paid more attention here, you know, and it's still a learning process. It was a lot to take on.
Which has been the most physically taxing?
Physically?
Mm.
I think it's more mental than physical.
Okay, but so all of them were similar levels of physically taxing.
Yeah, it was like, it's a lot. It's a lot to lead a large group of people, and everyone at the end of the day looks at you, the buck stops with you. And before, I never really had the buck stop completely with me. There's always someone above. Not that I would pass the buck by any means to them. Yeah, but,
it's not my fault. It's this guy's fault.
This fucking asshole.
I cooked it perfectly. Yeah. This guy just messed with it on the way out of the kitchen. Uh-huh. I don't know why.
Yeah. I told him not to mess it up, too. Yeah.
I told him not to even look at it. Yeah. Don't even look at that.
Yeah. So at Che, like, what skills are you honing? Are you, like, getting comfortable with cooking with open fire? Like, that's a very unique kitchen.
100% had to learn how to do that. I was not well-versed in that.
Yeah, John Mannion's known as Chicago's Francis Mallman.
Yeah, that's right. I've heard that. He actually introduces himself like that sometimes. Yeah. I definitely had to learn that. You know, it was definitely a learning curve there.
Can you give us like some pointers on that? You know, like vegetables and seafood off to the side, you know, without direct heat, things like that.
I mean, I would go more red meat. I mean, it depends what you're doing. You know what I mean? Like you can kind of give anything indirect heat is what I've learned. And over coals, you can kind of like cheat a little bit more sometimes. Hmm. And you kind of have to.
What's the cheating you mean?
Just like moving it off a little bit to the side and then putting it back on. Like you can kind of mess around and play around. We do it a lot in offsite events. It's kind of like sleight of hand where it's like, no, we cooked that over coals, but then we kind of put it over here to get some smoke on it. And you see like with the tomahawks, when you do those, we hang those and like it's getting smoke. We're adding flavor to it. It's not just a show, but it's definitely serving a purpose by tempering that meat and getting it to a more internal temperature that's a little bit warmer than cold. So when we sear it, it's done. Like when we're taking those down and we're hitting those, they're cooked. They're mid-rare.
Let's say you have a steak to cook at home to impress someone. What kind of cut are you getting and how are you preparing it?
Depends who I'm trying to impress.
Danny.
Danny? Yeah. I'm probably getting a ribeye for Danny.
All right, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, maybe Hollywood. Like a bone, maybe a bone-in 32-ounce ribeye.
Yeah.
All right, how are we prepping it?
I'm going to desalt it. I'm going to leave it out in the fridge probably overnight if I know you're coming over. And then I'm going to take it out probably about 2 hours before you get there and just let it sit. You don't really need much. I'm a big proponent and fan of just salt and some air. Oil in a pan, get that Maillard reaction, and cook it to mid-rare. And then if you have good quality meat, that's really all you need.
How long are you resting it after you cook it?
About 10 minutes.
Okay. And oil instead of butter?
No butter. I never cook with butter.
Okay.
It's the smoke point is so low. It burns so fast.
Ah,
so what kind of oil are we putting in that pan?
A neutral oil. Canola.
What's your favorite neutral? Grapeseed? Canola?
Canola. Yeah. Grapeseed's a little bit too fancy for me.
Is it more expensive?
So we should be cooking steaks in canola oil.
Grapeseed is a good one for like vinaigrettes though.
Okay.
Because
you don't want to heat it.
You could. It has a high smoke point,
right.
too.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Canola for me. Olive oil is not, like, I don't cook with olive oil.
But you see people, like,
butter.
Basting steaks and butter and shit. That's
that you add
bullshit.
The butter in. No, oh, you add the butter in right at the end to baste
when
it.
When the heat's
oh,
off.
Oh,
right?
I see. Yeah. You never cook it in butter.
No, because the butter's going to burn. Because the fat solids, they'll burn.
Ah, so the butter's really like a, almost like a garnish or something, you know,
yeah,
like
it's
a late
finishing,
stage
a little finishing
finisher.
Touch.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I was shocked to hear you're cooking your salmon in butter in a pan.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like a real horse.
He almost
patoot.
Walked out of here.
Oh my god!
I can't do this.
Are you doing a sauce with Danny's steak?
You know,
are you chimmying it? I'd probably
chimmy it.
Yeah.
I've grown too accustomed to eating chimichurri with steaks.
Yeah, Danny's too fancy to have.
Can you divulge
steak.
The chimichurri secrets on this pod?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think John has it published in pretty much every major magazine.
Nice. Does he publish a fake version though, so that when you come into the restaurant,
I actually
it's
think
much
that's
better.
The one recipe that he does not publish a fake version of.
Everything else is totally fake.
No.
I was talking to him last time I was at Bracero about the salad recipe where he like people are like, why don't you have the salad anymore? Was it from Serena?
Oh, that La Serena salad.
Yeah, and he
the charred poblano vinaigrette.
And then he'll share the recipe, but it's for like 300 covers or something.
Yeah, you can make 800 salads at your house with this. It like gets you 16 quarts of poblano vinaigrette.
Wait, so what's the chimmy recipe?
I could gram it out for you if I.
No, let's just say what's in it.
It's parsley, oregano.
Yep.
Garlic, white distilled vinegar. Mm-hmm. Crushed red pepper flakes, a little bit of MSG,
yep.
Salt and pepper.
No cilantro.
No cilantro.
Shannon can have it.
Yeah, it's for Shannon.
Wow.
It's for Shannon. We actually do it just for Shannon.
That's
we,
what I've
we
heard.
Omitted the cilantro out of it just for Shannon.
Yeah. Love that.
As a courtesy, she helped design the beautiful restaurant that we call Bracero.
So we're like, let's drop the cilantro.
Funny, Danny texted me last weekend, and he's like, what are the must-haves at Bracero? And I'm like,
which is funny because we've both eaten there. I'd eaten there,
but we had different things.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I just like to get another perspective.
And so I'm like, oh, Danny's asking. She's like, why wouldn't he ask me? She's like, I'm there every day.
I mean, she's not wrong.
I mean, Tim and I are communicating so frequently that it's
it's probably
like
just easier
breathing.
In between the text about business to say, hey, what food should I order?
Yeah, you know what's funny? I thought about that recently. Like, I had some texts to return yesterday, and I was like, I'm just going to text him. Like, it was just so, like, it's so convenient. Like, once you're texting with someone so much, there's not, like, a thought that goes into it, whereas someone that you don't text with frequently, you really have to, like, think about. You're like, all right, I'm going to open this back up, I guess.
Yeah, 100%.
Do you, mm-hmm. It's like such a weird thing.
My red receipts are on, so I just won't open.
You're a sociopath. If you have your red receipts on.
I want you to know if I saw your text.
And then didn't reply intentionally.
I have a must reply immediately mentality, and it's really unhealthy. I need to get away from
my
phone.
I'm kind of the same, I guess.
There's a couple people I have that mentality with, John Mannion being number one, but... And like Dan Boyd being number two, but other than that, I will reply if I feel the need to reply to you during the course of my day.
I love that. Yeah.
Unless it's about
boundaries,
business, I do. Yeah. I don't. Even sometimes when it's about business, it's like, hey, can I come in and meet you today? It's like, I'm not opening that right now.
What are your hours now?
At Bracero?
Yeah.
5 to 10.
No, you're like, were you asking the restaurant?
No, your
hours. Yeah, you like, what do you do?
Yeah.
Oh, my hours?
What's your schedule?
It varies. Right. I mean, right now, opening a new restaurant's the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
Admittedly, it's probably the hardest thing most people that have not done it yet there have done.
What are some of the challenges you didn't anticipate?
The devil's in the details, man. It's like death by 1,000 paper cuts sometimes, you know? You don't really think about, like, when I went into Che, it's already existing, right? Like, there's already some sort of infrastructure there. You can improve on the infrastructure, which we did. We got busier, all these things, but, like, the nine pans were there, and the mop heads were there, and the things were in the place where they're in, and you can change that a little bit as you see fit ergonomically, but, like, when you get a blank slate, it's like, where does this go? How does this flow? And then you start to get into busy services, and you're like, why the fuck is this freezer over here instead of over there? And it's just like, it's all these things compile, and you're like, shit, like all the little things that we didn't think about.
For sure. Do you think like you're finally kind of hitting your stride?
We're starting to like really hit the stride, but you learn every day that you have a lot to go, you know? Yesterday, it was like, man, we got a lot to work on here. We have a lot to improve on. and it's fun to pat yourself on the back, but we're not at that place yet, I don't think.
Are there dishes that have already been cut from the menu?
100%.
What were the things that have been cut and why?
Duck cochinilla, too labor intensive to pull it off the way that we wanted to.
What is duck cochinilla?
Duck cochinilla, the original cochinilla is made from chicken.
Okay.
It is a flour that's made with chicken stock and AP flour, some salt, pretty basic. Also got a pat de jus almost. Okay. And the story goes that there was a spoiled little prince who liked chicken drumsticks, and the chef of the kingdom ran out of chicken drumsticks, so he did not get in trouble and did not get executed. He made, he boiled chicken, shredded it, and then wrapped it in this dough and deep fried it and made it and put a chicken bone in there and made it look like a chicken drumstick.
Oh, that's cool.
It's probably a great story. It's probably completely made up. But,
I like that. Yeah. Kind of trolling the diner.
Yeah, exactly.
And the little prince loved it so much that it became a national Brazilian cuisine, apparently.
Mm. Cool.
I think the story's kind of bullshit, but I'll tell it to the day I die.
Yeah, it's a good story. Yeah. And you don't have to tell it anymore. It's not on the menu.
I don't. Well, for now, it's one of those things that I kind of. It's one of the dishes that people come in. They're like, "Oh, the duck balls are off the menu." We call them duck balls. It's like, yeah, we'll see if they make an appearance back once we get going. But there's been a couple. We took the Thor's hammer shank off because it's about to get really warm, and no one wants to eat braised meat and risotto when it's 90 degrees outside. So
yeah, fair enough. Anticipation.
Are you gonna replace it with another high ticket item?
We replaced it with a porterhouse.
Ooh.
Yeah, 48-ounce porterhouse.
Served ice cold.
Creek stone. Exactly. Raw. We serve it on some yuca fries with a bunch of sauces. It's a showstopper. It's pretty good.
Cool. Yeah, those big pieces that you guys do are so
good. Is it a John Mannion restaurant without a large format
meat? True. I was going to say, how many tomahawks do you think you've cooked and consumed since you started?
Not a lot consumed, but a lot cooked.
Yeah.
Hundreds. Hundreds and hundreds.
They're so good.
Do you want to,
that might be a death row meal item.
Yeah, the tomahawk is like synonymous with the Camp Wandawege event. Do you want to talk through the process there? I mean, how long are you cooking those? You start early in the morning.
Not in the morning. We start like afternoon after that lunch.
Oh, really?
They break down, lunch breaks down, and then usually John will be like, all right, I'm going to go up and like shower and get ready and take a little nap and rest before this. And I'm usually like, all right, cool. I'm going to start to like.
He rests?
It's crazy.
At camp?
Barely. In life, too, barely rests. That guy, I don't know when he sleeps. He'll be shooting off emails and texts at like 6:30, and I'm up kind of early now. I've like become more of an early riser, but I'm like, he stays as late as I do sometimes. I'm like, I don't know how you do it, man. With two kids and a dog.
Yeah.
All right, he is a machine.
So let me paint the picture. We've got Adam over the coals with a wet rag draped over his head. It's 100 degrees outside.
Yeah, you guys picked the hottest week.
John Mannion's in the Hill House in air conditioning, napping in a real bed.
No. Oh, man. I did have that. That wet towel is needed. You guys picked the most scorching.
Well, when we picked it, it was like 8 months prior, so we had no idea.
Oh, man.
This year, we're doing it in September.
It's the smartest move.
Yeah, so hopefully it
Can't
will
wait.
Cool off a bit.
What a great time.
But all right,
even hot, it was the best time.
So undefeated.
You get the coals going. How long are you cooking it? And it, like, because they sit and drip over the coals for how long? 3 hours?
About 3 hours. But you could go. We could go 8 if we wanted to. We would just move the fire farther away and just get smoke on it.
Yeah. And how much maintenance are you giving those? You're kind of watching them.
You're just checking the temp. You're brushing with beef fat. I'm watching them because it's beautiful.
Are you spraying them?
No. Brush.
Brush. Okay. Yeah.
The reason we're watching it is because it's like religion. And it's like the thing that me and John, and I know John loves it the most. He has so much fun doing it. You can like tell on his face. He's like a kid in a candy store. But like we're watching it because, not because we need to, we could just let it ride, but because it's like you want to tend to it. You want it to be perfect. And you want to like be one with like, not many people get to do that or see that. It's kind of a rare
thing. Cooking over open fire at that event. But like that's something to behold. That's like a, it's very cool. It's great, a great photo opportunity too.
There's the best photos, I think, that come from those tomahawks hanging and someone just like staring at them intently.
I've taken lots of pics.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe too many. Some people have
get Danny out of here.
Danny's on a couple
He's
lists.
He's too intrusive for those photos. I'm just like a prince in a drumstick store, man.
Yeah, that's right.
So I remember talking to John when he said he was working on a new concept, and I'm like, who's going to cook? And he's like, Adam. And you guys have become like this kind of like Batman and Robin
situation. We actually have a Batman and Robin that sits on the pass at Rosario.
Do you?
Yeah. There's a little Batman and a little Robin that sit on the pass. Oh, we had a Robin, and I posted a picture. And I was like, I'm Robin, John's Batman. Who, like, where is Batman at? And John's friend Shannon Romo. One day a Batman just shows up, and I'm like, who the fuck bought this Batman? I was like, John, did you buy that Batman? He's like, no, I didn't buy that Batman. I was like, good, that'd have been weird as fuck if you bought that Batman. That'd have been really weird, man. I'm really glad to hear you did not buy this Batman. And it ended up being John's friend Shannon, yeah. Our friend Shannon.
Shannon Romo.
Yeah, she's the best. She sent the Batman. So now Batman and Robin sit on the ticket machine every night at Bracero.
Perfect team.
So you taking over with the food, I mean, John still oversees stuff, but that's freed him up to do more business stuff? Or what's the relationship like now?
He's definitely falling more into an owner role. He trusts, me to run Bracero. We have a great CDC, Dan Martini, over at LJ as well, who we have all the trust in the world in. I was definitely not the only one doing the food at Bracero. Melody, Arnold, and Zachary Hertz are, I mean, integral. Like, could not have done it without them. They might even, I would say, have more to do with the food than I do. I have editing. I have, you know, we taste together. We collaborated on almost every single dish. But they're definitely a huge part of it. I could not have done it without those two.
And they're both a good hang.
They're a great hang.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they're amazing. They're friends, also outside of work, which has its own challenges inside of work, but,
yeah.
No, I love those two. They're great.
So what does menu creation look like now? Is it a hierarchy? Is it John coming up with ideas? You figuring things, like, how does that all come
together? It's kind of a lot of different things. John will come up with an idea sometimes. Sometimes it's Zach coming up with an idea. Sometimes it's me being like, yo, I want to change this, or I want to do this. Or, hey, Zach, here's my vision. Can you, like, what are you thinking? Can you, like, run with this? Or, hey, Melody, like, Melody's kind of a lone wolf. She, like, likes to do it her way, and you just kind of like leave her alone, and she comes up with the best product possible through that. But like, it's a very hands-off, don't look at me, don't touch, like, you don't fucking
yeah
talk
I think
to me
John said something similar. Yeah. He's like, we'll give her something and she'll just disappear.
Yes, and then she'll come back. Yes, and it's perfect. It's truly remarkable how she does it. I don't know how she does it, because she literally disappears and you can't, like, you cannot interrupt her process. It's pretty funny.
It's art.
She actually cool. She is the sole owner of the sweet potato.
Oh.
She disappeared with a sweet potato and came back with what is now the Bracero sweet potato, and it's probably the one menu item that we'll never be able to get rid of or change. Cause
yeah,
it's so
Shannon,
popular.
when I texted you, that's a must have. Shannon was like, gotta have the sweet potato.
Yeah, it's she killed it with that one.
And the mokaka.
Yeah.
Yeah, the creative process though at the start was like, we were in that room, that Garmo room, which is that I call it the Borg Cube. I've dubbed it the Borg Cube because it's just this black room with windows, and we had construction paper with notes, like with dish notes, and sometimes they would get crossed off, and we would like fuck it up. The whole construction paper would be like all scribbled on, and then it would be like tear it down, and then write it again, and like let's pare this down, or let's amp this up, or let's take this off. I think we started with like three salads on the menu, and John walked in one day, didn't say a fucking word to anyone, grabs a marker and just crosses off two of the salads and looks at me and is like, we only need one fucking salad.
The one salad is awesome.
It is really good.
Yeah. That's a must have too. Yeah. It's huge and delicious.
It's very shareable. Yeah. Also, pro tip, you can order a half size of it. So
I did not know that.
Now we know.
Secret menu item, half endive salad.
Yeah. On the same topic, how do you guys approach menu design? Like, what is it? It's not starters. What do you guys call them? Is it shares?
Shareables. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's a very nice. It's easy to navigate as a diner. How do you guys balance that? And how do you decide how many you want in each section?
We're still trying to figure that out. Actually, we pared down the shareables quite a bit, and we added more to the mains. Mm. We had a lot of shareables. How we're organizing that is kind of like lightest to heaviest. So it goes like pao de queijo, endive.
Top to bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're trying to like make it easy for you. If you're reading it from top to bottom, you're kind of going on that journey of like your ordering process, how it should be. And you can kind of say the same thing about the right side of the menu as well. It's kind of like top down.
Yeah.
You start out with like lobster, moqueca, and then you get into like the more chicken, pork, red meat stuff towards the bottom. So we try to organize it in a way that's easy for the consumer to read. Sometimes people don't really know what they're doing, but they know what they want, and it's kind of easier to guide them without having someone. I hate a restaurant spiel where it's like, yeah, like, come on, let's go. Like, I know what I'm ordering here, yeah. And also this is taking way too long for you to tell me how to order.
Yeah.
I get it. You recommend 4 to 6 plates per, yeah, I've heard this before. I get it. Let's move on.
That's the one thing about bars and restaurants that might annoy him. Yeah, just the menu the tour.
Yeah. All right, Tim, should we hit him with the gratuity round?
Gosh, are you ready for the gratuity round?
I don't know. I'm scared.
This episode is brought to you by Scofflaw Old Tom Gin, a tasty, versatile spirit. Created in Chicago in 2012, the product was born out of a need for a bespoke iteration of the Old Tom style, which is the slightly sweeter predecessor to London Dry. Scofflaw Old Tom Gin carries classic notes of orange peel, juniper, and coriander, while balancing on a subtle floral edge thanks to the addition of osmanthus blossoms. Its elevated proof is suitable in cocktails or unadorned. Scofflaw Old Tom Gin, complete your bar. All right, Adam Meyer Wiener, what is your death row meal?
Ooh, it's two things. It is my Hungarian grandmother's langos, which is a yeasted potato bread that they put a bunch of garlic and sour cream and cheese on. Mm. They deep fry it and then rub garlic on it and then put the sour cream and cheese on it. A little bit of scallion on top for good measure. And then my Nana's pork neck gravy.
Wow. Is Nana around?
Nana's around. Ooh. She's alive and well. She's still making it.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I'm going to get an invite. All right.
I referred to sauce as gravy to an Italian the other day, and like, we don't call it gravy. We call it sauce.
That's like, oh, whatever, man.
And I was okay. I felt so awkward.
You should have been like, oh, how Italian are you Italian? Yeah. That's crazy. Tell me about how Italian you are.
Yeah, he definitely like wanted to like make me feel shitty.
And were
like,
you in Italy? Where were you?
No, it was in town.
Was he wearing an Adidas tracksuit?
No, he was not, but it was very funny.
All right. If you were to be remembered for one dish, what would you want it to be?
I had this pasta dish on the menu at the Bristol. It was a shrimp agnolotti, and it was probably my favorite dish I've ever made. It was a very long process during which a server on one of the first renditions told me that it tasted like a tuna salad sandwich from Subway. And I had to look internally. I had to look in the mirror at myself, and she was right. And I had to really change how we were going about the dish itself. And it ended up being one of the best pasta dishes that I made. And people still do ask me about it, which is hilarious to me.
Wow.
Here's an added one, because I know you wanted us to ask Todd about this. What's the hardest you've gone down in service?
Oh, it was that New Year's Eve service that he kind of talked about, but did not.
Yeah, I want the real story.
Yeah, give us the real story.
It was not dramatic the way he told it.
No, it wasn't. He like held back so much. It was like, Todd, he was like, well, I was like, all right, Todd.
What happened?
So our CDC at the time, we had a bunch of line cooks that were pretty big into drinking. They were like, you know, they're pretty barracho. Like, there was like a whole line of like these dudes that just love to drink. And our CDC at the time also liked to drink, and he was supplying alcohol before all day, basically. So before the service.
Gosh.
So by the time
we even get to service,
we did the cardinal sin thing of we created a whole new menu for this one service, which is always a disaster as it is, because no one knows what they're doing.
Part.
Yeah, it sucks. I'll never do it again. And if you want to come out for New Year's Eve, you can eat the menu that we have. It's delicious. It's special in itself. Yeah. And these guys were wasted by the time we get to service, like, to the point where I'm like looking around like, shit, man, this is not going well already. This is not going to go well. So we're scrambling to get to the
start. Are you
the
only
service.
Non-wasted one?
Yes.
So you're the only semi-wasted?
No, the dishwasher was sober, I think, at the time. Me and the dishwasher. We were looking at each other like, fuck.
this is the beginning of how long of a shift?
It was like a 16-hour day for me, probably. I was a junior sous chef at this point. I was working basic inside plating, inside expo, like middle station. To start, I had to go all over after that because people got way too drunk. They had like bottles in the low boy, I think, at one point. And I was just looking at them like, dude, you got to stop drinking, man.
Oh, my gosh.
And the service starts. Within 5 minutes, I'm reaching in to grab some duck breasts that were searing off in the oven. And this dude is holding the oven door open, and it's one of those spring-loaded ones that pop back in if you let go of it. Like, it closes heavy. And he dropped it, let go of it from probably about 75% of the way down. And it slammed my entire arm in the oven door to start service, burning hot. I had like, they were probably second degree burns. It was rough. They immediately popped. So I had to go bandage myself.
Oh my God.
Get back on the line and work service. By the end of it, the CDC cried on Expo. It was that bad. It was a nightmare. It was one of those services where at the end of it, I looked at the CDC. I closed my station. It was like, I would never do this, but I closed my station. I'm fucking out of here. This was bullshit. This is your fault.
Oh man.
I'm going to go.
Did they apologize to you at any point?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was a come to Jesus moment. I think he's actually doing really well now. I think that was like kind of like a
turning point.
It was a big turning point for him. And like, he did not stay around much longer after that.
Did the rest of the cooks feel bad?
No, they didn't give a shit. I mean, the guy that slammed my arm in the door, I think he felt bad for about 2 seconds.
And that, well, he was too drunk. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we had our pasta cook went outside to smoke a cigarette in the middle of service and came back and could barely stand. It was like, dude, this is my worst nightmare. I couldn't make this up.
Oh my gosh.
It was by far the worst service. And there's been nothing close to it since.
That seems like a complete nightmare.
I love a fiasco story, though.
This one is like a great story. It's like not even funny. It's like just like
it was sad. It's fucking hilarious. It's like, what the fuck was going on?
That setting is
you
rough.
Can't do that shit anymore, though. You know, and like
yeah,
even like then you couldn't do it. It's dangerous. You know, we're working around sharp objects with fire. Like it's not. Why would you want to be drunk while you're doing that? It's not. It's not fun.
Yeah,
that
sucks.
Do you have any fun fiasco stories from the dining room? Like people who've been, like there's a lot of very good wine at the restaurants. People being overserved and acting a fool.
One time we had this guy who was with his girlfriend. He was definitely on like some sort of pills, I'm guessing. He came in kind of not Tim. I'm not going to tell that story on here. We'll save that one for Wanda Wega when I do a speech. Yeah.
It's called a deposition.
And we're in a courtroom and we're not in Wandawega. This guy, he came in with his girlfriend. He was pretty messed up when he came in, probably. We didn't really know. We served him like a beer, noticed that he was messed up. His girlfriend ends up leaving him. He ends up leaving because he walks into the girl's bathroom. So we kick him out. Like, you're messed up. You got to go. He comes back and he thinks that we're his hotel. So he's asking to get up to his room to get his stuff. And we're like, dude, we're not a hotel. He proceeds for the next 3 to 4 hours. Yeah, it went way far too long.
Four
and it was freezing
hours?
Outside. It was probably like three, like two or three.
It was two or three. And he keeps coming in trying to get to his room?
Yeah, me and John and Alex were outside.
Why didn't you just take him to his room?
By the dumpster. Yeah. Yeah. Here's the elevator,
yeah, exactly.
Buddy.
Here you go. Here's your key.
Yeah. Here's my freight elevator. Me and John Alex were outside with this guy for far too long. He ends up like spitting on me. It was a whole.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Spitting at me. I don't think he really got much on me, but.
Wow.
He was basically the one term he repeated over and over again was he was telling Alex Cooper to tell me to get off of his dick. Was like, he just kept on saying that to Alex Cooper. I was like, dude, this is fucking wild.
Oh man.
And his girlfriend ended up coming to get him.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Okay.
3 hours.
She was like, I'm so sorry. Yeah. I was like,
so
you're sorry?
Yeah.
You should be sorry. You left us with this maniac? Jesus Christ.
Oh, man. Okay. Let's get back on track here. Favorite hidden gem restaurant?
Ooh, a hidden gem restaurant.
It's funny. I don't know. Nagrin's piece that came out this morning said there are no more hidden gems, but then he divulged a hidden gem.
I'm waiting to read it till I get back to work, but. Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think there are a lot of hidden gems. I would say like Chosun Oak would be my one where it's like if people don't know about that, then I'll tell them there. I feel like every time I'm talking about Perilla, like when people haven't eaten at Perilla, but that's not a hidden gem. It's like, I think that for me, it's more like, have you eaten at Le Bouchon? Have you eaten at Oboli? Have you eaten at Perilla? Have you eaten at Monteverde? Like, and if you haven't, then that is to me like where I recommend people. Chosun Oak, obviously. Also, if you want to go just get like treated like shit and have the best meal of all time, Chosun Oak is the fucking place for you, because I love it. It's like they won't even refill your water there. They're like, get the fuck out of here, man. And I love that.
I thrive on abuse.
Yeah, I thrive. I love it. You know, Sunhwa, too.
Oh, yeah.
You haven't been to Sunhwa. That's another great spot. Going to get that duck. It's like one of the best deals in the city.
Yeah. Another stock holiday really party situation. Or there's, stock party situation.
There's another place up there called Mas a la del Sol.
Dude, I was there.
It's a Mexican spot. Talking it's about fire. It.
I was there on Saturday. My sister turned it's me fire. On to it. It's so good.
So good. Yeah. That would be all right. So there's my there. That's probably my answer because no one knows about it.
Yeah. Mas a la del Sol.
Yeah.
It's the food is just so solid.
What crazy timing.
Yeah, it's not Mas a la.
No.
Mas a la.
He was literally just. He talked. You called me, I think. To talk
it's like
about
Liz's
it.
Favorite it's so restaurant yeah. now. It's outstanding. Yeah.
It's so good.
Now we're gonna blow it up, and we won't be able to get in anymore.
I know. Yeah. And you can get. You can. It's like that's the crux, right? It's like I want them to do. They've been there for a while, though. They've been there for a long time. I used to go up there when I lived up in Edgewater a lot.
Yeah,
that was like my spot. We'd go sit and drink margaritas on the. They have a little patio in the summertime. That's pretty good.
Mm. What's your order there?
It varies. I usually get like the shrimp with like the red sauce or like tacos or whatever. Everything's good there though. Their guacamole is fucking amazing.
It is.
The one with the pomegranate in it and the mango. Usually I would not go for something like that, but they kill it.
I didn't get the fruit one.
Yeah, the fruit one's good. Oh. And usually I would not say that.
I get the tapenia, or last time I got the surf and turf, but I did the shrimp in the mojo de ajo sauce. Instead.
Yeah, the shrimp and mojo de ajo is great.
Yeah. Masaya del Sol. Good answer.
Getting hungry.
A bunch
here.
Of good answers in there. All right. Favorite fast food. He's looking at the Culver's toys.
He's not fully looking that far away.
I forgot they moved.
Culver's is up there. I would say my favorite fast food is probably the one that I eat the most, which is Jet's Pizza.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which one do you get?
I get the turbo crust, pepperoni usually, but I steady have the bottle of ranch in my fridge.
Yeah. Oh.
Do they have their own ranch?
They have their own ranch, and they sell it by the bottle.
I didn't know that.
If I run out, I will just order a Jet's Pizza just to have
Jet's
more ranch.
Ranch like that solid?
They must put something in. There's like a lot of MSG in there, I feel like.
Yeah. Wow.
Interesting. Yeah. Dang. You know what?
It's like a wedge, like a steak salad with that?
Oh, yeah. I put it on everything. Yeah. I will order a pizza and not eat the pizza just for the ranch sometimes.
Wow. Yeah.
I'll eat the pizza the next day.
It's a fat-ass thing to say, but putting ranch on pizza is amazing.
It
but
is
you
really
do not
good.
Feel good Sir, about yourself.
No, you don't. You don't do it in front of people either. It's something I do alone.
No, it's definitely a college move, but it's so good.
Yeah.
Like when I'm eating pizza in public or like at Che, unless I'm around like Zach, who's also a scumbag.
That's what we need to do is develop a pizza ranch that is not white. So that it's not, it's a discreet.
Oh, incognito. Yeah.
Incognito.
Make it look like tomato sauce.
Yeah, exactly.
Just call it respectable pizza sauce.
I'm just adding more. Yeah.
Dignity. I'm just adding more pizza sauce.
Dignity on. Brand.
Dignity sauce. I'm going to put some more dignity sauce.
Right, we
got to
cut
this.
That out. We have $1 million idea here, boys.
All right. Here's our cameo question. This one comes from previous guest, Abe Vusekovic. He asks, who is your celebrity pass?
What?
Like your crush that you would hook
celebrity
up with.
Crush.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's got to be. Back in the day, I'll give two answers here. So, young Adam, Sandra Bullock.
Wow.
Okay.
Speed era?
In which movie? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely Speed era.
Okay.
Not in While You Were Sleeping?
I don't know if I've seen that.
Oh, well. I think
I'll add that to the list. It's a good movie, I'm sure. You look very disappointed.
It's a Shannon movie.
Oh, don't look at me like that ever again. Yeah.
It's got a Peter Gallagher.
I love that. And then right now, it's probably like Sydney Sweeney or like Billie Eilish would be.
Oh,
like,
wow. Okay. Billie Eilish is 16?
No, she's 21. Like 21. 22. No,
yeah, she is. Okay. He likes talent. He's attracted to talent.
I want to hear yours now.
Let's see. Age appropriate.
Dude, I'm young, no, by the way. Sydney Sweeney or Billie Eilish is.
How old are you?
I'm 29.
You're only 29?
I'm only 29.
He's a young guy.
Young pup. Let's see. I've always had a thing for Kate Beckinsale.
Ah, yeah, that's a good
who
one.
Is 20 years older
Very
than me.
Safe, yes. Yeah. Super safe.
I don't know. B. Arthur.
I don't know. Susan Sarandon for me. That's just my choice. But I don't know. You guys.
Diane Keaton has always done it for me.
This is really old women. I love it.
Oh, my God.
Danny, care to answer?
Yeah, Susan Sarandon, man.
Okay.
Play it safe.
All right.
I'd have to think on it. It's a good question.
It is a good question. Maybe you could answer in the outro.
Yeah, I'll try to.
Least favorite food?
Baby corn.
Yes!
Baby Same. Corn sucks. Baby corn's the worst.
Yeah.
Anyone that tells me differently, you're wrong.
Yes. What is why?
Why? Why does it exist? To
the
get it off of my fried
flavor,
rice, please.
Horrible flavor.
Terrible.
Bad texture.
Yeah.
Ugly.
Ugly.
Yeah.
It's like if you picked corn too early.
Fetal corn is what it should be called.
Yeah, exactly.
It has no place in any cuisine.
Yeah, it should not exist. Get it off my fried rice, please, for the love of God.
Yeah. What about like baby corn skewers? Is that a product idea? Does that have legs?
No.
No. Didn't even think about it. All right. What's your favorite cocktail?
Probably a daiquiri.
Ooh. Okay.
Any specifics?
Or a paper plane, maybe.
Okay.
What is the build of a paper plane?
So a paper plane is bourbon, usually lemon, Nonino, and Aperol in equal parts.
You hate equal parts cocktails.
No, I mean, that's a people love that. Version? We have like at Feather, there's a paper crane right now. I mean, there's a lot of riffs on it that you see everywhere.
I like a good riff on it. I don't really, like, the straight up ones are fine, but I like when someone plays around a little bit. I also don't like equal parts.
Yeah. Mm. So you go more booze heavy.
More booze heavy, or if you're, I mean, I'd rather just not, it'd be a fastball down the middle. You know what I mean? I'd rather have a little bit of intricacy there.
Love it. That will inform this dealer's choice.
Yeah. You got your work cut out for
you. That's right. I'm ready.
All right.
I believe in you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Favorite band or musician?
Ooh, that's a good one.
The Cabin Boys?
Cabin Boys.
Do you remember them from Wandawega?
Yeah, I do.
I know you do. Danny has no memory of anything.
That
I remembered laughing very hard.
No, that was the year. That was 2 years ago. Anyway.
They did it. They were great.
They were awesome. They were a good hang.
I mean, that year we were all a little bit. That one was a little bit more wild than the second
but they, wait, yeah. But Cabin Boys were first night of 2 years ago?
They played both nights.
Okay. Because they played in the rain ago, in the cabin. Came.
Yeah, okay. Right.
That was like, that night I was sheeted.
We stayed up
gone.
Till 4 a.m. playing that dice
yeah,
game.
That, but that was,
oh, we were
that
in
was
the
first night.
We were in the little den.
I got there like that more the next
night. Oh, yeah, Danny showed up late.
Yeah.
I thought it was the second night. We were in that little gambling den playing like cards. And
oh,
cards.
That was
this
time.
And John took everyone's money and then left.
I won this. I'm out. Peace.
Well, he won like a couple, and then he was like, "I gotta go." And he just like disappeared. We're all like, "Did he just take all of our money and leave?"
And we listened to the same song for 4 hours.
Yeah,
baby, lock the door and turn the lights down low. All right.
Favorite. I think right now it's I'm really on a Kendrick Lamar or Vince Staples.
You know what's crazy? I was trying to look back at like the past album to see like where King Kunta was, and I realized that song was from 2015.
Yeah, it's like 3 hours.
And I was
ago.
Like, oh my, it like blew my mind how long ago I had enjoyed that album.
I'm on a whole, like I've been listening to whole albums. So I'm on like the Vince Staples self-titled album I've been listening to all the way through a lot, and then Damn by Kendrick Lamar I've been listening all the way through
so
a lot.
Good. I've been listening to a lot of Doom recently.
Oh, MF Doom, love
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Doom 2?
Yeah. Doom with an M.
All right.
I got into John's truck the other day, and he was playing a MF Doom playlist, and I was like, fuck yeah.
It's the best, dude. It's too good.
Favorite movie?
Oh, my God. These are hard.
These are hard. I wouldn't pass.
Who should we ask?
I'm going to go with my childhood favorite movie of mine and my brother's, Bad Boys 2.
Wow.
Will Smith and Martin Lawrence.
Martin Lawrence, yeah.
Pre-slap.
Someone wanted us to ask favorite food movie. Do you have one?
Just because it's so terrible. It's literally one of the worst movies of all time. Burnt. I love to watch it and just cringe.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
so bad.
I never
it's like
saw
hilarious
it.
To me. I will like just when I like want to watch a bad movie, I'll just turn that on and I'll have a time. I'll like laugh at all like the silly like little stupid scenes that it's like who made this?
When it based on? Is it based on someone specific?
I have no clue, but the opening scene when his penance is shucking a million oysters and he has like that little notepad and he just like takes his apron on and walks out and he gets on his fucking nice motorcycle and then his motorcycle is all of a sudden in France. It's like, all right, first of all, you know how much that costs to get that motorcycle over to France? It's the most unrealistic. Like it just starts so ridiculous that it just does not.
They already lost you. You're gone. Yeah, first scene.
But it doesn't let up. It just keeps on getting more ridiculous.
Oh my God.
So just purely because of that. Actually, my favorite food movie for real to watch that's actually a good food movie is Big Night Out.
Yeah, I
was going to say Big Night Out? What's that?
It's with...
You have to watch it.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's like Tucci. Shalhoub.
Okay.
Stanley Tucci, and they play...
you had me at
these
Tucci.
These two brothers, one's a chef, one is like the front of the house guy,
they're
and they're
the
operating
restaurant.
A failing Italian restaurant across the street. This
that's
other
a great
guy
movie.
Is operating like a very successful Italian like steakhouse, and he's like a rich... My favorite scene in that movie is when the front of the house brother is talking to the chef brother, and the chef brother is like, como se dice, hot dog? It's a good one.
Yeah, you'd love that movie, actually.
All right, I'll watch it, fine. And then our last question. If you weren't doing this, what the hell would you be doing?
I'd probably farm. I'd probably want to like work on a farm. Like cool. grow plants and food and fruit and vegetables.
Have you done that at all? Like, do you have any
experience
with that?
When I was in high school, my parents actually sent me away, and I worked on a farm in Branson area, Missouri, in Forsyth County. I worked on a farm out there for a little bit over a year.
What were you farming?
Watermelon, corn, tomatoes, a lot of herbs. In the fall time, we were doing like squash, pumpkins.
Cool.
A whole bunch of stuff. I was a part of starting the farm from scratch. Like, the first thing we did was like burn off like acres of land and cut down trees. It's pretty wild.
Wow. That's a pretty cool experience.
That is cool. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's hope you don't have to become a farmer though.
Hey man, there's still time left. Who's to say?
I think that's a great way to retire.
That'd be cool.
Doesn't work out for me, I'm going right back.
Tierney Farms is hiring.
Yeah, that's right.
it's just my dad and us on the weekends. All right, that's a wrap on Adam. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for being here.
And that concludes our conversation with Adam Meyer of Bracero. Thanks for listening this week. And hey, check us out on social media. We've got stuff up there. You're getting two reels a week. That's what we've committed to. You might even get to see a special reel about the beer that we made. Check out the beer. Go to Fresh Marketplace. They're selling a lot of it, actually. Did you know that, Dan?
Yeah, you might not even be able to get it there. It might be sold out.
They did sell out once. They've already had to reorder.
It might be sold out again.
And it's on tap. Is it on tap at Scofflaw, Danny?
Gotta get it tasted.
Yeah. Do you need access to the beer to get it tasted?
No, I gave it to the team to taste. They still have to taste it.
Oh, that's interesting. It was like 3 weeks ago. Anyway, check us out on social media at JoinersPod for exclusive content. You'll find cocktails there as well. This episode was produced by Matt Haddock, music by Captain Cuts, and of course, our real work's done by the one and only Joe Guzzo III. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.